Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by ConvaTec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. My name's Rod Murray, and today I'm quite excited because not only do I have my co-host Dr. Fran Henshaw in the studio with me, but she's also brought a special guest. Dr. Fran, who is it that we welcome today, and what is it that we're going to be talking to our mystery guest about?
Hi, Rod. Today we have Joseph Frankel with us. Joseph is actually a podiatrist who also has lots of postgrad qualifications in wounds, and he's also got a massive following on his Facebook group. So he's quite a celebrity in the world of wounds.
Excellent. Joseph, welcome. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks, Rod. Thanks, Fran. Great to be here.
How does a podiatrist gather around him a fan club on Facebook?
Well, it's all through the power of imagery. So we know that social media has many different genres. Uh-huh. And so, you know, one of them in particular is graphic imagery of wounds, of dermatoses. I mean, sometimes I can wow and both disgust my dinner table guests with some of the,
I think the word you're looking for is fetish. And I think Dr. Fran will be at the front of the queue if you've got pictures of disgusting wounds on there.
Well, that's it. The thing is, you see, because Joseph has his own website, and it's not website, Facebook page, he can actually do whatever he likes. But ConvaTec have a lot more restrictions on me. I'll get reported to the privacy people if I try to put lots of gory pictures up on Facebook.
You've just reminded me of another episode we must do, Fran. That's the power and how we can use social media in medicine and the world of wounds. We did one on technology with the phone and some of that sort of stuff. Mm. Here's a prime example. And we had now, who was the chap we had on who did the podcast, the podiatrist? From Queensland.
Oh, Tyson.
Fantastic. Mm. You've got a huge following on there as well. Interesting stuff. Not for this episode. What are we going to talk about this episode, Fran?
Well, today, we're going to talk about something called wound hygiene. Now, what does that mean to you, Rod?
Cut yourself, put some Dettol on it or Savlon, not to be, you know, there are other brands are available, and that's wound hygiene. You're done.
Well, that's the kind of bloke's wound hygiene, I think, but possibly not the encompassing way to look after a wound. So let me just give you a bit of background. In 2019, ConvaTec got a load of experts from all over the world, locked them in a room in London and told them to figure out why hard-to-heal wounds don't heal and how we can make them heal.
Because that's a real problem, isn't it, Fran? Wounds that don't heal are the real issue, is that
huge problem.
Yeah. Dare I say it's what keeps us in business.
Yeah. It is what keeps people in business. But we all want these people to be out of business because, you know, the old end game is to get these wounds healed as quickly as possible. And these experts decided that the big barrier to most wounds healing was something called biofilm. Now, we have talked a little bit about biofilm, but I might get my colleague Joseph to just give us a quick top line about biofilm.
Throw me in the deep end with all the technical stuff. So the best analogy I can come up with biofilm is dental plaque. So when you go to the dentist and they scrape all that gunk, mostly on your bottom teeth, that's actually a biofilm.
Right.
So biofilm is a mass of microbes, mostly bacteria, that work together in this sort of unique communal manner called quorum sensing. And they sort of join together to create this massive goo, which is mostly just complex sugar molecules and starches. And it blocks effectively anything from the outside from getting in there. And so things like antibiotics and certain dressings can actually they're unable to penetrate through all that mass. And so wounds kind of, it's almost like a scab on top of a scab, so to speak. Cause we know, I mean, getting back to Rod's blokey wound hygiene kind of thing, bung a bit of antiseptic on it and Bob's your uncle. We all know that, you know, from when we've had simple wounds, they scab up, but when there's the presence of a biofilm, it actually delays the normal sequence of wound healing. And so wounds kind of get stuck because of this massive gunk that just sits there.
How long have we known about this for, Joseph? Is this a reasonably recent sort of discovery?
I mean, we sort of intuitively knew about it, obviously through things like dentistry and just other areas. Biofilms are also a factor when it comes to implants. So if we put a prosthetic knee in somebody, because we know that certain materials – tend to attract more microbes. So we've known about it, I'd say, probably for 20 years or so,
I'd say at least, yeah. It's really come into the forefront as a problem, because I think the other thing is people used to think that you had to see a biofilm. So they thought unless there's something had a big layer of slime on it, it couldn't possibly have biofilm.
Right.
Well, now we know that biofilm is actually exceptionally tenacious, and it can exist in many different forms, including very low levels. And so we don't necessarily see biofilm. So I think now we've realized that Matt Malone's paper, I think, did a meta-analysis and said 78% of wounds have biofilm if they're hard to heal. So a wound that's not meeting its milestones, it's been open for longer than it should have been, has probably got biofilm. So back to these boffins who Convatec stuffed in the room in London to they came up with this concept that biofilm was a reason why a lot of wounds won't heal. And they came up with a four-step plan, which we're going to talk about now, which they named wound hygiene. And there's four parts to wound hygiene. The first thing you need to do, the panel decided, is cleanse the wound. Then you need to debride it. Mm-hmm. Then refashioning the edges. And last but not least, the bit that Convatec loves, putting the dressing on. So let's go back to the beginning. Joseph, tell us about how we can cleanse wounds.
Well, it's a little bit contentious because wound cleansing has come a long way in terms of what we actually put on it. There was, speaking of research, there was a relatively recent Cochrane review which had a look at a number of different cleansers for wounds, one of which was potable or drinkable tap water. And they found comparing that with saline or with wound-specific cleansers, and there's a number of them on the market, they found that drinkable tap water was comparable.
Right.
Which is quite interesting. So
surprising too, I would have thought.
Well, yes, and so the challenge of things like meta-analyses and reviews and systematic reviews and things like that is that they only include certain studies. So it's almost like you've got to be able to reach a certain level of research-based evidence for them to look at it. So it doesn't, it's a big picture, but it's not the entirety of the picture.
Conclusiveness, so you can't
well,
say conclusively
correct,
this.
Correct. And one thing that wound professionals know is that we need to individualize. So if you've got a patient with a stinky, you know, green, oozy looking wound.
These are the technical terms Fran uses
yeah.
too.
I'm sorry, yes, for all the listeners out there, sorry to go all jargony. But, you know, that's not the kind of thing that you're just going to give a bit of a rinse with, you know, water from the tap. So that individualization can also have lifestyle factors as well in terms of when you would cleanse, who would cleanse, and so it's almost like there's a continuum along those steps. So it's not like it's do X, Y, Z and then we equal a healed wound. There's obviously a bit of a process to it, but yeah.
So I think really what we're saying is that with wound hygiene, the thing that I like about it is that it can be done on many different levels. So if you've got, you know, one of your kids has just fallen over in the playground and you just run it under the tap, water's probably fine. They've probably got a very good immune system, not a bad cut. They'll heal anyway. If, you know, Beryl's 94 and on immunosuppressive medication and gets bitten by a dog, you might want to up the ante a little bit at that point and actually, you know, use something to cleanse a wound that was going to have more antimicrobial properties. So I guess, you know, there's what's available to you. And then there's what type of wound we're looking at. And I guess with these hard to heal wounds where we know there's biofilm, using these cleansers that have got things like surfactants in them to actually lift the biofilm may go some way to helping get rid of it. And that's what I imagine is the case. But the other thing is there's almost this mechanical aspect as well when you're cleansing something. So presumably if
you're just about to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the actual physical act of washing something over it, and that links into the second stage of wound hygiene, as you mentioned before about debridement. The physical act of actually moving something across a surface is enough to disrupt biofilm formation.
Right.
Which is why you typically get biofilm formation in areas that don't move very much.
What do you mean by that don't move? Like where on the body the wound is?
Correct. Well, but also, what the actual tissue mechanics are doing. So again, getting back to the dental analogy, you don't get as much plaque on the upper part of your mouth because gravity allows food particles and bacteria to fall. So generally biofilms are stagnant, biofilms form on stagnant areas. And so, if a wound surface is stagnant, i.e. it's not being cleansed or debrided, then that gives the colonies of bacteria an opportunity to form their army against whatever you're putting against it. Right. It's an epic war.
Yeah. So it's a bit like having a stagnant pond versus a flowing river, isn't it?
Right.
Exactly. And stagnant ponds get biofilm. It's just a different type of biofilm, I'd imagine. So there's lots of different ways you can deal with wounds in terms of debridement. Now, Rod always accuses me of lighting up like a Christmas tree when I
the mere thought of a scalpel just excites you, Fran.
I'm glowing because you know there's nothing more satisfying than taking some grotty looking wound after you've correctly assessed the patient as suitable and you've got some consent from them, and just cutting all the bad bits away with a knife. And
do you go forceps in one hand, scalpel in the other?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Usually, yeah.
You know, double.
Come on, you'd be two scalpels, wouldn't you, friend? One in each hand. I get with scissor hands.
I've got lots of Tarantino imagery.
Yeah. But of course, you know, sharp debridement is one of those things that's not for everybody. And, you know, if we go back to, you know, Beryl, who's got some venous leg ulcer and the only person who can look after her is her, you know, partially sighted husband, Harry, who's also got a Parkinson's tremor, we're probably not going to be giving him a scalpel, are we? And so, you know, again, it's something that you need to be able to find something that's appropriate for the wound and safe for the person who's actually looking after the wound. So what kind of things might we get Harry to do his debridement with?
Well, it's interesting you mention that. I mean, maybe not Harry specifically. And again, this lends itself back to the biofilm dental connection. There's a number of new products on the market that are actually basically like wound toothbrushes.
Yes.
And they're really, really effective. So, so in a case of Harry and Beryl, I mean, sterile gauze perhaps could be a good alternative. Obviously under health professional guidance, not just from Dr. Google or YouTube.
But popular physicians in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I know. It's amazing. I think I remember reading some research. Apparently, if you Google your disease, you're about 2/3 likely to get it. But I don't know about you, Fran, but I do, I'd say about once or twice a year have patients coming in that have printed off, you know,
the diagnosis.
Just so you know, I think this is what I have. And they hand over copious amounts of documentation to prove.
Honestly, are they ever right?
Well, in two cases, they were.
That's infuriating, isn't it? Infuriating.
Slightly. But the interesting thing is because they then you've agreed with their own diagnosis, therefore that validates you as
You can now go ahead with the treatment.
Absolutely.
Because you've proved yourself.
Now that you have passed my internet
exactly
test.
Right.
But yeah, and so I think, again, that just lends itself to that idea of individualization and lifestyle, because when it comes to dealing with a chronic wound, I mean, potentially you're dressing a wound, what, 2-3 times a week? And so any recruitment we can have for family or self-care is really important. And if you compare that with something as ubiquitous as asthma, for example, people, asthmatic individuals don't run to their doctor on a weekly basis. They'll set up a management plan, they'll have reviews, and there's no reason why wounds can't be managed in the same way.
Are the wound toothbrushes, is that something that a lay person can use, for want of a better term? Because the scalpel clearly is not something that you want people trying to do themselves.
Well, no.
Fran, I'm sure they have, and YouTube no doubt have many tutorials on how to do it.
Fran, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I look at, say, my own parents, and I think my dad would be able to operate the wound toothbrush or the debridement pad or whatever. I think that.
Is he a retired surgeon, by the way?
No, he's a retired engineer, but I don't think that really qualifies him.
If he marks it up, he'll just build another
hand.
So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's not like you can accidentally dig a hole in someone with a soft debridement pad. And some of these have these kind of special filaments on them that actually attract the
bristles
dust.
Almost.
Yeah. You know, like the super mop you used to get that picked all the stuff.
Yeah, they actually do look like that.
Yeah.
So I imagine that technology is improving all the time. Absolutely. As well, because the holy grail is to have people as much of their own care as possible, I assume.
One of the downsides of them, I have heard, though, is that sometimes they're quite expensive. So if they're a single use.
They are, and they're single use. Yeah. So that cost is often worn by the patient. So.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but then the next question is, how often do you debride a wound?
Well,
I mean, if you're Fran, obviously every 12 hours. But.
Well, yeah, because.
If it's not ready, find another one.
That's right.
Apparently, the biofilm starts coming back fairly soon after being even debrided with a scalpel. Right. There's evidence to
so
say
physical
that.
Physical removal of it is not.
Yeah.
So, if you talk to biofilm experts, they think that physical removal of biofilm, you know, by sharp debridement is probably the optimal way to get rid of it. If you're not up for the scalpel, they have things called a curette, which is like a tiny little melon baller that you can kind of scrape a wound out with. And obviously you're not going to accidentally go too deep with a melon baller like you might with a scalpel. And then if you are not really experienced enough to use that, you can use your wound toothbrush or you can use your piece of gauze. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there's like this real kind of good stuff like low frequency ultrasound debridement.
It looks really cool.
Yeah.
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 You can YouTube that in your own time. It's pretty cool.
It makes a lot of mess though. We used to do it at the hospital.
It kind of creates a bit of an aerosol of biofilm.
We all had to have our own pair of wellies that we wore when we did that, along with like, you know, almost like a hazmat suit, because it does make a bit of mess. But
well, it makes sense. Again, back to the dentist. When they scrape off, when they ultrasonically scale your teeth, it does create a bit of an aerosol as well. So it's almost analogous with that.
Really is quite disgusting, isn't it?
The wounds. So we can cleanse with various lotions and potions, or we can just use water or saline. Then we can debride with various bits and pieces according to our experience.
The ultrasound would be a hospital or doctor's office. Yeah. You're not getting one of those.
No. Yeah, you don't set that up.
You're not buying
kitchen.
That on eBay.
No. That's right. And if you do, don't use it. That's the advice.
Certainly not.
Yeah. So, and the next bit of wound hygiene, I was a little bit kind of unsure about this when I first heard about it, and it's called refashioning the wound edge. So what do you think about this, Joseph?
I mean, I'm not even sure what that term means.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about it, because I was talking to the head of medical education for ConvaTec, and she was around when the panel decided about wound hygiene. And when I first heard about refashioning the wound edges, which is basically flattening them down and paying particular attention to them.
Have you got one of your hideous tools to do that with as well, Fran? Do you get something to add to the toolkit for that?
Well, you know, it's the same old thing. It's just a scalpel, isn't it? It's a multi-purpose. Yeah. If all you've got is a scalpel, like everything looks
spatula.
Like a wound. Yeah. So basically, this panel were talking about what you need to do, and there was a surgeon who was very insistent on refashioning and paying attention to the wound edges. And some of the panel apparently were not, you know, that enamored with this concept and said, as I said myself, well, it's just like debridement, isn't it? But if you think about it, we know that biofilm lives more around the edge of wounds. And if you think about it, wounds require oxygen to heal and biofilms require oxygen to keep going. Well, where's most of the oxygen in a wound? It's around the edge, because that's where you get the vascular ingress or the blood vessels growing in. And so this is kind of where the competition is hotting up for who can get the oxygen. And therefore, you need to get the biofilm out the way so that the wound can actually have the oxygen and the wound edges can advance, because obviously that's where it heals from. So it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And just on your point, I mean, wounds aren't these perfectly symmetrical structures, both in depth and in terms of width. So I found, and getting back to my question earlier of how frequently to cleanse or debride, I found that certain corners of the wound can be attacked more than others.
Mm.
And that really builds on that argument of refashioning a wound and sort of picking your border, so to speak. So it's sort of like, you know, depending on where the wound's located, if there's an area that's particularly highly colonized because of the depth or the vascularity, then maybe that's the area to pick. And then the other interesting thing that I've noticed, and I'm sure there's evidence to support this, but I can't think of it off the top of my head, is that by influencing the wound with healthy advancing tissue, it's sort of like the wound properties themselves and the colonies actually change. And I wonder also whether, particularly with a chronic wound, going off on lots of tangents here, particularly with a chronic wound, whether or not refashioning a wound and debridement is actually bringing it back to an acute wound. So it's almost like rebooting the process.
Right.
Because there's a very sequential process of wound healing. You know, we've got hemostasis, and then we've got wound remodeling, et cetera, granulation, eventually epithelialization, but bringing it all the way back to the start. And I'm sure this has happened to you when you've debrided. You do create a little bit more wounding sometimes, a little bit of bleeding sometimes. And that actually brings the wound back. And so the cellular behaviours are then influenced in a positive way.
Oh, well, you know, I could go on about this for hours because I did my PhD looking at the wound microenvironment. And basically what they know is that when a wound's been around for a long time, the body basically gives up on it.
Right.
And so it stops making all the things that are trying to heal the wound. So
wasting energy trying to heal something that's not working.
And one of the real ways that you can demonstrate this is that sometimes they do biopsies of wounds if they think they might have a malignancy or something like that. And often the bit that they biopsy, so the 6 mil part that they, you know, take out of the wound in a big chunk, heals. So that part of the wound heals and the rest of it doesn't.
Doesn't, right.
So there is this, you know, real case for making a chronic wound or a hard to heal wound into an acute wound by cutting it back, because it stimulates these things like growth factors and cytokines that will actually help wounds to heal.
I imagine as a clinician or the person doing that, it's a fairly big decision to make. Let's take this old wound, make it new again, and see if that might be able to restart.
Well, it is. And often, I think the technical term for that is surgical debridement. So when you surgically debride a wound, it's a medical procedure.
Right.
It's almost akin to plastic surgery in a sense as to the depth of the actual excision. So,
and you really need to, if you're doing it to a patient in a clinic, I can tell you that this out of experience, you really need to tell them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise,
just let it come as a shock.
Yeah.
just be prepared. I'm cutting a massive hole in you, the hole you already have.
Yeah. Because otherwise, they can get a little bit upset when they start bleeding and things like that. But you have, if you explain to them that we're getting rid of all this old rubbish and we will take it back to a bleeding base, but we know what we're doing. We're not just digging for gold here. Then, you know, but it is very important to manage expectations.
It's interesting you mention that, because I've had a number of patients say to me that, oh, you've made my wound worse. It's bigger or it's redder and it wasn't like this before. So you're quite right. Yeah.
Okay, so now this is the best bit, of course. Well, we've done our cleanse, debride, refashion, and now we've got to put a dressing on.
Oh, so you don't just leave it open now, Fran?
No, otherwise.
Gone are those days. Otherwise, what are we doing here?
That's right.
Exactly.
What was the point of steps 1 to 3?
So, obviously it's important that you choose an appropriate dressing. So Joseph, can you just run us through maybe what you would consider the properties of a good dressing to be?
Well, it really depends on what you're trying to achieve with the wound, but you need something that's going to decolonize a wound. So something that's going to hopefully have some sort of antimicrobial component to it, something that's going to absorb all the gunk that's coming out of a wound. There's protein, there's fluid, there's cells, there's tissue that are coming out of a wound. You want something that is going to stay in place for ideally a couple of days, because otherwise there'll need to be a constant redressing. And you want something that doesn't add to any pain or discomfort that the patient has, because wounds can be painful, particularly if, you know, discussing the cases
we've talked about. Just doubled it in size.
So, you know, those are
stop looking at me, Ross.
That's right. A lot of accusatory glances from this side of the room. But anyway, what was your question about who?
About the who. Is there specifically, so our target audience here, we've made up a mythical community health worker, a nurse or similar, who runs around and sees all sorts of conditions, including wounds. Are there people in particular who are susceptible to a wound that'll develop biofilm and become difficult to treat? Or are we all at that sort of risk if, like me, you do the blokey treatment and then you go and dip your hand in manure?
It's a really good question.
It's interesting, actually. I was in Alice Springs last week and they were telling me about lots of quite unusual wounds that they get out that way. And so they might have people that you wouldn't consider to be at great risk of getting wounds, because they might be, you know, men in their 40s, for example. But they have a lot of unusual strains of bacteria in the soil and things like that. So there can be these environmental factors that could, you know, make a wound go off like a rocket that ordinarily would probably heal really well. So
Kim told us humidity was an issue in Queensland.
Humidity, and it's hard to get dressings to stick as well sometimes when it's humid. But we've got stuff for that at Convatec.
No doubt.
A centre. So there's those kind of factors. But then there's a lot of patient-related factors. And patient-related factors, I like to look at them in terms of modifiable and non-modifiable. So your age is a non-modifiable risk factor. You can lie about it, but it's not going to change. Smoking is probably a modifiable risk factor. You can give up smoking if you want to. So those are the, there's the patient related factors, and then there's all the kind of medical conditions and medications that can influence wound healing. So there's a whole plethora, but you know, I think age and chronic disease really predisposes people to wounds, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say so, because as we age, well, basically our tissue thins, so it's more susceptible to damage. I mean, we know that the overwhelming majority of chronic wound patients are 70 plus. And the process of aging is both a noun as well as an acronym. So aging is advanced glycation end product. So basically what happens is sugar molecules bind to proteins all throughout the body, but particularly in the dermis, when those sugar molecules become stiff, the tissue actually shrinks. That's why as we get old, particularly our facial tissue looks a bit sunken. I know it's a
speaking of accusatory glances, I thought the sting of that is you look my way, Joseph.
I'm just not at all, Rod. You're wonderfully proportioned. So I'm just going to close.
That was a great explanation of advanced glycation.
So from a wound perspective, the thinner tissue is, the less resilient it is to day-to-day trauma. And so Fran's right in the sense that you've got what we call extrinsic and intrinsic factors, and some of them are modifiable and some of them aren't. But it also more broadly paints the picture that the wound is part of the skin is an organ, and each organ interacts with other organs and tissues. And so you've got the vascular supply, you've got musculoskeletal factors, you've got all infectious factors, inflammatory, et cetera. So there's a whole merry dance going on with lots of different pieces.
Hence no one size fits all.
Essentially.
We'd have discovered that ages ago and we'd all be okay for that. For our mythical audience member, Joseph, what sorts of things might they be on the lookout for? The idea, of course, is always prevention. To stop a wound from becoming a difficult to heal wound, what are the early signs that people can sort of look for that give them a clue? Maybe we need to get a specialist to look at this now.
Great question. Often, the simplest way to assess that is actually time. In other words, how long have I had this for? Generally speaking, anything that's been there for more than 3 to 4 weeks is a bit of a red flag that hasn't really shown, or rather something that looks exactly the same after 3 to 4 weeks. Right. So if you've got an area that's pretty much unchanged, that's a bit of a red flag. And perhaps this is discussed for another podcast, but you know, some wounds aren't really wounds. They're also something else. So I'd say something like that, in terms of time, but also in terms of, appearance, whether it's changing, whether it's growing, and I'm trying to think of another thing, and also whether or not you're getting different symptoms. Not to be too gross, but smell is a big one as well as discharge. So, you know, all of those sensory aspects, if those elements are not your typical presentation and feedback, and I think intrinsically we know what's normal for us, you know, I mean, we all have different presentations of illnesses. But I think most of us have wounded ourselves at some point that we understand our healing trajectory. So if something's been there for a month that looks and smells kind of funky and, you know, isn't better, then that's a bit of a red flag, and that's when you go off to see someone.
Absolutely. I mean, I like the concept of when something hasn't met its milestones. So, you know, a paper cut should heal in 2 days, but if it hasn't healed in 2 weeks, it's not met its milestones. So you're probably not going to get overly excited about a paper cut, but I think that it's really important to instigate this wound hygiene as early as possible when, you know, if you've got an open wound, because we know that once bacteria has congregated and made friends with its other bacterial friends and other yeasts and Christ knows what else is in there, then we probably need to make sure that they don't turn themselves into a biofilm, because that's much harder to get rid of. So, you know, this very simple thing, even if it's just something that somebody's doing independently at home, wound hygiene can be done on this level. So it can be the person at home who's the carer with the water from the tap, some gauze and a dressing, or it can be the nurse practitioner with her surfactant cleansers, low frequency ultrasound debridement, and high end, you know, hydrofiber dressings or something. So that's what I like about it. You can really do it on whatever level you're comfortable and competent at.
this stuff is important, isn't it? It wasn't that many generations ago that you could die from a cut, wasn't it?
Like, absolutely.
Wasn't that long ago in human history that that could potentially a fatal thing that could happen.
Well, antibiotics have really only been around since World War II.
Yeah.
And with the advent of antibiotics as well as, well, basically post-World War II wounds from gunshots and shrapnel and whatnot, that's really the only – that's basically our foundation of where we are today. So, as you know,
70, 80 years.
Yeah. So it's you're right. It's really not that long.
Fran, we very rarely do this, but I want to give you a chance to talk about some of Convatec's products to finish up.
Oh, thanks.
What makes for a good Convatec? Obviously, got a range of different sorts of things. What makes for a good wound dressing? Obviously, once you've assessed what all the wounds, what is it that makes wound dressings good? Or better.
Well, I think in terms of, you know, if we look at it in the background of wound hygiene, then we want a dressing that actually manages biofilm. And Convatec have recently launched, as we're recording this, a new product called Aquacel AG Plus Extra. And Aquacel AG Plus Extra is an ionic silver dressing, and these have been around for quite some time, but they've actually added a surfactant and a metal chelating agent. Now, these things sound quite complicated, don't they? But basically what these do is they actually work on the biofilm, so on the substance called the EPS that kind of holds the biofilm together. It melts that away, and then the silver can actually get really nicely into the bacteria and punch holes in it and kill it. So you know, we really need to do all of our wound hygiene, but we know that biofilm is very tenacious and grows back. So let's have a dressing that keeps working and addressing it. So it's disrupting and destroying the biofilm whilst you're sleeping in your bed at night. So,
and the last thing I was going to ask was, the natural human response is to constantly want to change your dressing to keep it clean. Joseph mentioned before, what you actually want is the opposite.
Mm.
Are we getting better with that sort of thing? Making bandages and wound dressings that can stay on for longer.
Absolutely. And, I mean, Fran can give you the details of how long something like Aquacel can stay in place for, but from a practical, even from a financial perspective, it's much easier to dress a wound once, twice a week. You know, that's something that we've really come far in. And how, with this particular new fancy one, and I don't want to get this Aquacel super duper one.
Yeah. Call it that.
How long can we leave that in place for?
So that, then it's instructions for use. You can leave it on for a week. And obviously it would have to be managing the exudate or the goo that's coming out of the wound. But it does hold a lot of fluids, and it holds the fluid away from the wound. So it's not going to make the wound all soggy or anything like that. So, you know, that's really good, because firstly, you're not going to be putting someone through pain by pulling dressings on and off. The wound temperature is not going to go down to stall healing, and you've got less chance of introducing infection if you've got an antibiofilm dressing left in place for as long as you like. And
just got to convince your Google patient that it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And I'm sure if they come in with a chronic wound and they Google this, they'll have all the wonderful information from Convatec on it.
Dr. Fran, have we plunged the depths of Dr. Joseph's
We have.
Knowledge here enough.
We've had a great little tour through the world of wound hygiene, and I can't believe you let me talk about Convatec products. I'm very excited about that.
Thought
thanks,
wounds
Rod.
Could be so much fun.
And I got to talk about debridement as well, which, as you know, is my favourite
really
thing.
Put a pep in your step, hasn't
it?
You're going to enjoy the rest of the day. In that case, let's wrap it up. Dr. Joseph, thank you. Really appreciate you coming in. It's been fabulous to chat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Dr. Fran, as always, for you as well.
Thanks, Rod.
We'll be back next time here on The Wound Doctors.